Poor, degenerate times nowadays, something comes close to this earth and lisps little commonplaces to her. July 31, 1921. A shower of little frogs that fell upon Anton Wagner's farm, near Sterling, Conn. New York Evening World, August 1, 1921. At sunset, August 7, 1921, an unknown luminous object was seen, near the sun, at Mt. Hamilton, by an astronomer, Professor Campbell, and by one of those who may someday go out and set foot upon regions that are supposed not to be, by an aviator, Captain Rickenbacker. In the English Mechanic, 114-211, another character in these fluttering vistas of the opening of the coming drama of extra geography, Col. Markwick, a conventional astronomer and also a recorder of strange things, lists other observations upon this object, the earliest upon the 6th, by Dr. Emmert, of Detroit. In the English Mechanic, 114-241, H.P. Hollis, once upon a time deliciously exact and positive, says something, in commenting upon these observations, that looks like a little weakness in exclusionism, because the old sureness is turning slightly shaky that there are more wonderful things in the sky than we suspect, or that it is easy to be self-deceived. It is funny to read of an earthquake, described in technical lingo, and to have a datum that indicates that it was no earthquake at all, in the usual seismologic sense, but a concussion from an explosion in the sky. August 7, 1921. A severe shock at New Canton, Virginia. C. Bull. Cease. SOC. America, 11-197. Professor Stephen Tabor's explanation that the shock had probably originated in the slate belt of Buckingham County, intensity about V on the RF scale. But then it is said that, according to the authorities of the McCormick Observatory, the concussion was from an explosion in the sky. The time is coming when nothing funny will be seen in this subject, if someday be accepted at least parts of the masses of data that I am now holding back, until I can more fully develop them, that some of the greatest catastrophes that have devastated the face of this earth have been concussions from explosions in the sky, so repeating in a local sky weeks at a time, months sometimes, or intermittently for centuries, that fixed origins above the ravaged areas are indicated. New York Tribune, September 2, 1921. J.C.H. Macbeth, London manager of the Marconi Wireless Telegraph Company, Limited, told several hundred men, at a luncheon of the Rotary Club, of New York, yesterday, that Signor Marconi believed he had intercepted messages from Mars, during recent atmospheric experiments with wireless on board his yacht Electra, in the Mediterranean. Mr. Macbeth said that Signor Marconi had been unable to conceive of any other explanation of the fact that, during his experiments, he had picked up magnetic wavelengths of 150,000 meters, whereas the maximum length of wave production in the world today is 14,000 meters. The regularity of the signals, Mr. Macbeth declared, disposed of any assumption that the waves might have been caused by electrical disturbance. The signals were unintelligible, consisting apparently of a code, the speaker said, and the only signal recognized was one resembling the letter V in the Marconi code. See datum of May 19, 1919. But, in the summer of 1921, the planet Mars was far from opposition. The magnetic vibrations may have come from some other world. They may have had the origin of the sounds that have been heard at regular intervals. The San Salvadors of the sky. And we return to the principle that has been our reinforcement throughout, that existence is infinite serialization, and that, except in particulars, it repeats. That the dot that spread upon the western horizon of Lisbon, March 4, 1493, cannot be the only ship that comes back from the unknown, cargoed with news. And it may be September this, 1920 or 30-something, or February that, 1920 or 30-something else and, later, see record of it in Eng. Mech, or Psi. America, Volume, and P. Something or Another, A Speck in the Sky of This Earth, The Return of Somebody from a San Salvador of the Sky, and The Denial by the Heavens Themselves, which may answer with explosions the vociferations below them, of false calculations upon their remotenesses. If the heavens do not participate with snow, the skyscrapers will precipitate torn up papers and shirts and skirts, too, when the papers give out. There will be a procession. Somebody will throw little black pebbles to the crowds. Over his procession will fly blue-fringed cupids. Later he will be insulted and abused and finally hounded to his death. But, in that procession, he will lead by the nose an outrageous thing that should not be, about 10 feet long, short-winged, waddling on webbed feet. Insult and abuse and death, he will snap his fingers under the nose of the outrageous thing. It will be worth a great deal to lead that by the nose and demonstrate that such things had been seen in the sky, though they had been supposed to be angels. It will be a great moment for somebody. He will come back to New York, and march up Broadway with his angel. Some now unheard of DeSoto, of this earth, will see for himself the father of cloudbursts. A Balboa of greatness now known only to himself will stand on a ridge in the sky between two auroral seas. Fountains of everlasting challenge. Argosies in parallel lines and rabbles of individual adventurers. Well enough may it be said that they are seeds in the sky. Of such are the germs of colonies. 37. That the geosystem is an incubating organism, of which this earth is the nucleus, but an organism that is so strongly characterized by conditions and features of its own that likening it to any object internal to it is the interpreting of a thing in terms of a constituent, so that we think of an organism that is incompletely, or absurdly inadequately, expressible in terms of the egg-like and the larval and other forms of the immature geonucleated system that is dependent upon its externality. As, in one way or another, is every similar, but lesser, and included, thing stimulated by flows of force that are now said to be meteoric, though many so-called meteoric streams seem more likely to be electric, that radiate from the umbilical channels of its constellations vitalized by its sun, which is itself replenished by the comets, which, coming from external reservoirs of force, impart to the sun their freightages, and, unaffected by gravitation, return to an external existence. Some of them even touching the sun, but showing no indication of supposed solar attraction. In a technical sense, we give up the doctrine of evolution. Ours is an expression upon superembryonic development, in one enclosed system. Ours is an expression upon design underlying and manifesting in all things within this one system, with a final designer left out, because we know of no designing force that is not itself the product of remoter design. In terms of our own experience, we cannot think of an ultimate designer, any more than we can think of ultimacy in any other respect. But we are discussing a system that, in our conception, is not a final entity, so then no metaphysical expression upon it is required. I point out that this expression of ours is not meant for aid and comfort to the reactionaries of the type of Colonel W. J. Bryan, for instance. It is not altogether anti-Darwinian. The concept of development replaces the concept of evolution, but we accept the process of selection, not to anything loosely known as environment, but relatively to underlying schedule and design, predetermined and supervised, as it were, but by nothing that we conceive of in anthropomorphic terms. I define what I mean by dynamic design, in the development of any embryonic thing, a predetermined, or not accidental, or not irresponsible, passage along a schedule of phases to a climax of unification of many parts. Some of the aspects of this process are the simultaneous varying of parts, with destiny and not with independence, for their rule, or with future coordinations and functions for their goal, and their survival while still incipient, not because they are fittest relatively to contemporaneous environment, so not because of usefulness or advantage in the present, inasmuch as at first they are not only functionless but also discordant with established relations, but surviving because they are in harmony with the dynamic plan of a whole being, and the presence of forces of suppression, or repression, as well as forces of stimulation and protection, so that parts are held back, or are not permitted to develop before their time. If we accept that these circumstances of embryonic development are the circumstances of all wider development, within one enclosed system, the doctrine of Darwinian evolution, as applied generally, will, in our minds, have to be replaced by an expression upon superembryonic development, and Darwinism, unmodified, will become to us one more of the insufficiencies of the past. Darwinism concerns itself with the adaptations of the present, and does heed the part that the past has played, but, in Darwinism, there is no place for the influence of the future upon the present. Consider any part of an embryonic thing the heart of an embryo, and at first it is only a loop. It will survive, and it will be nourished in its functionless incipiency, also it will not be permitted to become a fully developed heart before its scheduled time arrives, its circumstances are dominated by what it will be in the future. The eye of an embryo is a better instance. Consider anything of a sociologic nature that ever has grown, that there never has been an art, science, religion, invention that was not at first out of accord with established environment, visionary, preposterous in the light of later standards, useless in its incipiency, and resisted by established forces so that, seemingly animating it and protectively underlying it, there may have been something that in spite of its unfitness made it survive for future usefulness. Also there are data for the acceptance that all things, in wider being, are held back as well as protected and prepared for, and not permitted to develop before comes scheduled time. Langley's flying machine makes me think of something of the kind, that this machine was premature, that it appeared a little before the era of aviation upon this earth, and that therefore Langley could not fly. But this machine was capable of flying, because, some years later, Curtis did fly in it. Then one thinks that the Wright brothers were successful, because they did synchronize with a scheduled time. I have heard that it is questionable that Curtis made no alterations in Langley's machine. There is no lack of instances. One of the greatest of secrets that have eventually been found out was for ages blabbed by all the pots and kettles in the world, but that the secret of the steam engine could not, to the lowliest of intellects, or to supposititiously highest of intellects, more than adumbratively reveal itself until came the time for its coordination with the other phenomena and the requirements of the industrial age. And coal that was stored in abundance near the surface of the ground, and the needs of dwellers over coal mines, veins of which were often exposed upon the surface of the ground, for fuel, but that this secret, too, obvious, too, could not be revealed until the coming of the industrial age. Then the building of factories, the inventing of machines, the digging of coal, and the use of steam, all appearing by simultaneous variation, and coordinating. Shores of North America nowadays, with less hero worship than formerly, historians tell us that, to English and French fishermen, the coast of Newfoundland was well known, long before the year 1492, nevertheless, to the world in general, it was not, or, according to our acceptances, could not be, known. About the year 1500, a Portuguese fleet was driven by storms to the coast of Brazil, and returned to Europe. Then one thinks that likely enough, before the year 1492, other vessels had been so swept to the coasts of the Western Hemisphere, and had returned, but that data of westward lands could not emerge from the suppressed ions of that era, but that the data did survive, or were preserved for future usefulness, that there are thou shalt nots engraved upon something underlying all things, and then effacing, when phases pass away.